Bear Down Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Courtney Cronin in the building. It's draft time. We are going to talk about the draft yet again, but a different scenario than I think that we've talked about on this show. Diving deeper into the scenario of trading back, and to do that, we have to bring on a special guest. Going to have Luke Easterling on from Athlon Sports to help us with that. But first, Courtney, how are you?
I'm good. It's been a busy week. I'm in New York for Around the Horn, and you and I were talking before the show. It's just this dragging on process till we get to April, and we're like within a month, finally. Like, we are a month from right now. It was the 27th of April. Everything will be wrapped up, so I'm excited to get there. This feels like it's taken a little bit longer for us to get there just because the Bears are not the talk of the draft the way that they were last year, and it's Tennessee Titans who effectively solidified that this week with all the attention that they are giving Cam Ward. So looking forward to what the next 4 weeks bring, and you know, hopefully we'll have a lot to talk about come April 27th.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Chicago Bears can make things very, very interesting if they do have a trade back scenario. We got to talk about that, like I said. But first, we do got to let you guys know that today's episode of Chicago Bears podcast is brought to you by the Advantage Dealer Group. Find your next Chevy, Toyota, or Acura and drive off in under 60 minutes, or they'll make your first car payment. All right, let's welcome in now, Courtney, Luke Easterling of Athlon Sports. He covers the NFL and, more importantly, the NFL draft over there. He just dropped a brand new 4-round projection, which he does every single Thursday. And this one does include a big trade back here for the Chicago Bears. Luke, we're happy to have you here. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Looking forward to it.
It's going to be a very interesting draft process here for the Chicago Bears. And your mock draft that you dropped this morning, I thought was very interesting because it does include a trade back with a name still on the board that the Chicago Bears have been rumored to wanting to take here in Will Campbell. Let's start there. First round, your mock draft. Why do you think the Chicago Bears would want to trade back in that situation?
Yeah, so the scenario was interesting because I had the Raiders coming back from 6 to 9 with the Saints and still ending up in a position to kind of snipe the Bears for Ashton Jeanty there at 9. So they move back, they get an extra third, and they get Jeanty one spot before the Bears. So in putting myself in Ryan Poles, you know, position, if Jenty's really the guy I'm targeting, then I have to recalibrate a little bit. And obviously you have to find a trade partner. It takes two to tango. So there might be Bears fans that look at that and say, hey, why are the Seahawks coming up to 10 to take Will Campbell ahead of the 49ers, who I think would absolutely be in on him as well? Why aren't the Bears taking him there? And I think, honestly, if you pay attention to what everybody in that building has been saying, they seem more confident in Braxton Jones than I think a lot of the rest of us are. But that doesn't, you know, just because we think they might need an upgrade there might not mean that they agree. And so if they're not sold on having to spend a top 10 pick to replace Braxton Jones at this moment, and after the moves they made in free agency, how aggressive they were addressing the interior of the offensive line via the two trades and then bringing in Drew Dolman, I don't know that they would spend that top 10 pick on Will Campbell if they view him as a guard, which some teams might because of the arm length. I would definitely leave him at left tackle. I think the film's just too good. But they might view him that, you know, if they view him as a guard, I don't know that they value him at the top 10. So the way I looked at it was, if they have a willing partner who's willing to come up, give them a second round pick, which is what I had them projecting, they get the 50th overall pick from Seattle. Seattle's got a good bit of picks now. They can make a move if they want to go up and address the offensive line. I just thought if they really are disappointed in losing out on Jeanty and they wanted to recalibrate, get an extra pick, that was a great scenario for them to be able to do that. There's a lot of edge rushers on the board there still, but I think the depth of that class could give them confidence to move back to 18 where I had them dropping and still feel really, really good about what the board would look like there while you're adding, again, another top 50 pick.
And most mocks that we see, the gap between where Ashton Jeanty goes and the next best running back, who in this case you've got them taking Omarion Hampton from North Carolina at 18. Is late teens the sweet spot for Hampton? I know that he started out as a late first round pick, and that's still like a mid to late first round pick. Where can they be comfortable? Like, where's the line that you'd have to draw to know that he wouldn't be there after said pick?
Yeah, well, again, you know, one of the benefits to doing these types of deep mock drafts and exercises every week is that I get to see those trends for myself in a certain way. And so The floor for Hampton feels like 20 to Denver. That seems to be where he goes every time he's on the board there. And so I really feel like that develops a floor for a prospect for me. So if Hampton gets to 20, I think he goes there, which is why at 18, it makes perfect sense. You've dropped back. You've gotten an extra top 50 pick. And I do think that the closer we get to the draft, the gap between Jentie and Hampton continues to shrink. I don't think that he's quite in that same tier, but I think he does all the same things almost as well in terms of there's not really a big hole in his game. He's a three down back. He's big enough. He's fast enough. He can run between the tackles. He can take it to the house, catches the ball well out of the backfield. He's got a good frame. Every college running back needs some polish when it comes to pass protecting, but he's got the frame to be able to be effective once he kind of polishes that part of his game. And so dropping back, getting an extra top 50 pick, and still ending up with a guy that I think no matter what is a top 20 pick. And if you don't get him, somebody else is going to be happy to. And I think he just does all of the same things for your offense that Ashton Jentie would in theory. Again, I think he's a little bit better of a prospect, but if what you're trying to do is balance that offense to take pressure off of Caleb Williams and really give him a featured back to build the rest of that attack around to where there's not so much pressure on him to throw the ball 40, 45 times a game. And you know, they're going to be ahead in more games and they're going to be able to rely on the ground game. You've got to have a back that can churn out yards between the tackles, backs that can break off those long explosive plays and take one to the house every now and then. He accomplishes all of those same things and checks all those boxes in a similar way to Jentie, and you get him at 18 after picking up an extra pick. I think it'd be a great scenario for Chicago.
Now, I know you talked about them feeling comfortable on the offensive line there, but you do have a lot of pretty good defensive linemen still on the board there in your mock scenario. Kenneth Grant, of course, still on the board out of Michigan, kind of the other guy next to Mason Graham. You've got Donovan Isiriku coming off the board. Do you think that the Bears would look to go running back there, knowing how deep this draft is, kind of in that second round range? You can still get a lot of pieces, adding in the extra draft pick. I see that you do attack the trenches in your mock draft here, but you know, some of those guys that are going here are the guys that a lot of teams are looking at and saying, oh, that can be a game wrecker inside.
Yeah, I think that's really, it speaks to that depth. And if you look in the second round, those two early seconds that the Bears have, I think is where they would look at the depth of the interior and the edge class and say, we're pretty confident that we're going to be able to get value at that position. And we look at the running back position and we just say, hey, we really think that Hampton is a cut above that next tier. Both the Ohio State guys, Judkins and Henderson, Caleb Johnson from Iowa, I would put in that conversation as well. I do think it's Jentie is in his own tier. I think Hampton is in his own tier as the second best running back in this draft. And I do think there's a little bit of a gap there. And so that being the case, you feel more confident saying, hey, let me take the dynamic running back off the board. Let me help my young quarterback. Because again, at the end of the day, this ship is going to sink or swim with what happens with Caleb Williams. I think obviously loading up on defensive talent and balancing that out helps your quarterback, but he's got to have as much help as possible on the offensive side of the ball. So I'd feel most comfortable saying, hey, let me get that dynamic three down running back who can balance the offense, provide that part of the equation for Caleb Williams, knowing that the edge class and the interior defensive line class is going to give me guys like Nick Scorton on the board at 39, which is where I have him going to Chicago. It's going to leave me Darius Alexander from Toledo, absolute stud at the Senior Bowl and the scouting combine, to address the interior, which again, they brought in Grady Jarrett, great veteran addition, get that young guy to kind of develop behind him. So those two early seconds are going to be huge for them to take advantage of that depth, which is why whether they trade down and get Hampton or whether they stay at 10 and get Jentie, why they would feel comfortable taking what might be perceived as a luxury pick, knowing they can take advantage of that trench depth with those two early second round picks.
We heard Ryan Pohl say you can never have enough pass rushers, and that, you know, his biggest takeaway from watching the Super Bowl was that they came in waves with that pass rush, and it did start on the interior. So I know some people might look at that as a luxury item because they did just spend pretty significantly in free agency on Grady Jarrett and Deo Odingbo. But you then have, with the extra pick that the Bears got in this trade with Seattle, them going offensive line in the second round, 50th overall. Is there a run that you expect for like the second wave of offensive linemen, not the first rounders, but on day two, you've got them at 50 taking a tackle prospect. Is that where you expect the run to start on the second wave of offensive linemen that are going to go in the draft?
Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting stretch for them, because now when you get into the second round, you're getting, you know, you're getting into prospects who, you know, probably have a couple of more flaws than the guy you were targeting at 10 or 18 if you moved back. So there's going to be something that you're going to have to develop or deal with that's probably a little bit different than what you're dealing with in the first round. And I think viewing that 50th pick that they would get in that trade as somewhat of a more luxury pick, because honestly, you know, when I'm looking at it and I get to the board and I get there and I'm like, okay, well, they did all this in free agency. They've got their running back. They've got the edge guy they wanted. They got the interior guy they wanted. What do they really need that stands out? And there really isn't a glaring position if you look at the depth chart and say, oh my God, they've got to spend this 50th pick here. So at that point, that's where I said, I don't care how they feel about Braxton Jones. If a guy like Arionte Ursary, who I think is who I had them, you know, taking it from Minnesota, the left tackle, here's a guy, yep, very high upside, great physical traits, got the frame, got the length, the athleticism, all of those things. Just needs some, you know, some polish with the technique. That's what I pay my offensive line coach for, to get the traits in the building, let him develop and polish that guy up. So at that point, it was about matching value, because I think he's a mid to early second round pick. So if he's still on the board there, again, that depth at those other positions pushes those other positions down too. And that's why I think those edge guys and interior guys taking up so much space between pick 10 and pick 50 is going to push some of these guys that might not be complete players, like Ursary, again, needs some polish with the technique, but could get, put them in a position where they're saying, hey, we don't have any glaring needs elsewhere. Left tackle is too important of a position not to continue to invest in the quality of that spot. So let's, you know, let's get somebody to compete with Braxton Jones, who's a top 50 pick, and bring in a guy with the tools to develop. I think in terms of the run, Courtney, to get more directly to your question in terms of what happens at the offensive line, there's only 32 first-round picks. And I feel like every time I do one of these big mock drafts, I get to the end of every round and go, how in the world did I not get this guy in there? I feel like there's four or five guys at the end of the first and then the second and then the third round where I'm like, how did I not fit those guys in there? And there's just – I laugh about this time in the process where everybody's like, these 50 guys are not making it out of the first round. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. The math doesn't math there. So the value is going to be there. Guys like Tyler Booker, the guard from Alabama, was, you know, fell out of the first round in this mock. Donovan Jackson from Ohio State, who is fantastic, was dominant as a guard. And then, oh, by the way, I'm just going to kick out the left tackle when there's an injury and then play the entire college football playoff on the way to the championship and win a national championship playing left tackle. Those guys, if they don't sneak into the first round, it's going to be interesting to see how teams value them versus the edge guys and the interior guys and the receivers that are going to be on the board, that next tier of running backs. So the fact that the Bears lucked out and kind of had a potential starting left tackle still fall to them after getting their running back, getting both of those trench guys on defense, really speaks to not just the depth of the offensive line class, but how the depth of the other position groups are going to continue to push guys like that down the board.
So real quick on that, because when you take a look at your mock and where the edge rushers are coming off the board, but also the interior pass rushers too, how do you size up this group of defensive tackles? Because for them to go Scorton, who's an edge rusher, and then Alexander, who can be, he's versatile. He can play a lot of different positions.
Right.
Have you seen a group like this before? Is this like becoming a trend where these defensive tackles, who you might be waiting till day two or even like later on, you know, late third round, early fourth round to draft. Is there a reason why that position specifically is coming off the board so much more quickly, it seems, than a lot of mocks these days?
Well, I think it's a little bit of, you know, chicken and the egg, where yes, in terms of this class is just special. Like I think it's not quite what we saw from the receiver class last year, which was the best one I've ever seen. But this is the deepest, most talented interior class, and it's got every type of guy. You know, if you want a upfield penetrating three technique, you know, explosive pass rusher type, there's plenty of those. If you need a early down, you know, double team eater and run stuffer guy, you got Kenneth Grant, and you got Tyleek Williams, and you got so many of these guys that play that role really well. There's guys in between. Mason Graham is kind of in between those things. He can do them both at a high level. But in terms of the league and what it prioritizes, I did not play quarterback at a super high level, but I played long enough to know that I would much rather have edge pressure than interior pressure. And I think if you talk to a lot of quarterbacks at every level, that's something they prefer, because if there's edge pressure but the interior is clean, I have something to step into. If I get back on that drop step and I drop my weight on my back foot and I've got immediate A-gap pressure coming right up the middle in my face, now I've got to bail. I've got to do something else. And it creates a different type of chaos that I think quarterbacks hate way more than having somebody kind of bend around the edge and then I get to step up, or even I can find a lane to move up in any direction. If you're up in my face early in that drop and I don't have a chance to get comfortable on my back foot, I've got to bail, and now you're running me into the edge, guys. You're running me out of my progressions. If everything went one way, now my receivers have to adjust. And so when you have these interior guys that can create havoc immediately, even in the run game, if you've got a guy that can shift, that can make your running back change direction, you know, before he gets to his gap, before he's able to find the cutback lanes, because he's got to adjust as soon as he gets the ball, those guys can be so disruptive that I think the way the league is progressing, and honestly, you can look at the last couple of years, look at the money that offensive guards are getting in free agency, even ones that aren't really that great. Like, it's you're having to pay and overpay on the open market for even adequate interior protection, and that tells you everything you need to know about how much the league values the same thing on the other side of the ball in terms of how valuable these interior rushers are.
When you look at Ariante Arce, I think that it's a good pick for the Bears here in the second round, one that, like you said, is going to need some development. But how much of a gap is there between him and some of these first-round guys when you think about him coming in? Because to me, right, I think we've got question marks on just about every one of these guys and how they fit at the NFL level. Outside of maybe Will Campbell, I think the belief on him is he's got the technique to do whatever the heck he needs to do at the NFL. And I think Armand Membo is kind of the same. But outside of that, right, questions on Josh Simmons. You got questions on Gray Zabel in the competition level that he went up against, right? Like, I feel like every one of these offensive linemen we talk about, while talented, all are going to need a little bit of extra seasoning. How far down between them do you think Ariante really is?
Yeah, that's really why I went with him, is because I don't see a massive gap between him and that secondary. Armand Membo is the tackle OT1 for me at the top of the draft. I just think his film and experience and technique, and then he went to the combine and just is like, I'm not just a good athlete, I'm a world-class athlete. Okay, that confirms that for me. Will Campbell's not far behind. I think Kelvin Banks, honestly, is closer to that tier than the second tier. I think he's a little bit underrated somehow at this point after being a left tackle at Texas for a few years. But that next group, like you mentioned, Josh Simmons, you know, looked like a top 10 pick before he got injured, but coming off a serious knee injury. Gray Zabel, again, played a lot of left tackle at North Dakota State. I think his best trait is the fact that he can play all five positions up front. I think that will be attractive to a team in the late first round. But between them and, you know, again, you start to get into anybody else. Josh Connerly Jr., I think, from Oregon would be the other guy in that range. He went a little earlier to New England. But if you're telling me, you know, New England gets him at the top of the second and the Bears are still able to get a guy like Ursary at 50, I think there's not much of a gap, if at all, between those two guys. And I just felt like the value was too good. The position is too valuable. It's too premium of a position. And again, the gap really, again, I love Josh Simmons if he's healthy, but that's such a huge question mark. But the gap in particular between that tier and a guy like Ursary is not, you know, 20 picks away, which is what it ended up being for the Bears. So great value for them there.
So then in the end of your mock draft, we know that the Bears don't have a fourth round pick right now, but so they've got five and your last is in the third at 72. So initially they had four in the top 72 because of the trade back. They have five in the top 72. You're going receiver. So they get the other speedster from Texas and Isaiah Bond. So he's seventh in your receiver rankings. We know they've signed a couple depth pieces, Devin Duvernay, who's obviously a special team guy at receiver, and then, of course, Olamide Zaccheaus, who is a slot guy. Mm-hmm. Where does Bond slot into this offense? Is he is he a ready-made product, or are there things that you think the Bears would be looking at as far as upside that trait-wise fit what Ben Johnson wants to do?
Yeah, I think, honestly, he's not as tall. You know, he's a different body type than Jameson Williams, than what Ben Johnson had with him in Detroit. But he brings the similar kind of taking a top off the defense thing, because you've got, you know, you've heard the saying about trying to build your receiver room like a basketball team, where you've got these clearly defined roles and skill sets. You've got a big, you've got a stretch four, you've got a point guard, you've got all these different guys that can do different things. You got a slasher. Yeah. You know, they have Roma Dunze, who's really the do it all. He's the small forward who can bring the ball up the court, and he can also, you know, play the five if you need him to. He can do everything at such a high level. I'm a huge Roma Dunze fan. You got DJ Moore, who's kind of that, you know, he's Debo Samuel, but I think more complete as a player, because I think he can stretch the field a little bit better vertically, but he's so good in those after the catch, get him the ball quickly. He's built like a running back, so he breaks tackles so well, does so well getting the ball early and being able to just kind of be a return man, be a running back after that. I think what's missing from that group, they've got size with the Dunze, they've got the kind of well-rounded skill set with DJ Moore, And they really do need, I think, again, they do have speed with DuVernay, but I think he's more of a special teams play. Zacchaeus is kind of the slot guy who can get the short to intermediate, create separation with the route running. Bond is that you go that way guy, where he's just taking the top off the defense. And it's not just about what he creates for himself in doing that. It's what it forces the defense to account for. Because when he is on the field, the defense has to always be aware of his ability to take that deep part of the field and create something if they're not ready for it. So all it does is not just give him big play opportunities downfield, take advantage of Caleb Williams' arm strength. It opens up those intermediate routes, those digs, those crossers, where guys like Odunze will just eat all day long, DJ Moore the same way, because whoever's that deep defender is going to have to stay over the top of a guy like Bond because of that speed. I remember Tom Brady's a couple years in Tampa where he had Scotty Miller, where you know you had Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown and Gronk and all these guys. Scotty Miller had such an impact on that offense even when he wasn't catching the ball, because he's just the one guy they had who could run 4-3, and so everybody had to account for him. And the two or three plays a game that they didn't, he came up with huge plays and stretched the field. And so I think that when I look at a guy like Bond, there's a few other receivers on the board where if you just look at my rankings, maybe Isaiah Bond wasn't, you know, the highest guy on the list, and I just plug him in there. It's really about the team fit there for Chicago and bringing somebody to the table that fills a different type of role for that passing game. You can create those one or two splash plays, explosive plays down the field, but also open things up in that intermediate area for the rest of the receivers.
Yeah, the skill set of being able to take the top off is something that I love about Isaiah Bond. I guess the one question would be, do you feel like he is going to be able to take over that job? Is it his job to have, or do you feel like he would kind of just be somebody who, hey, we got to bring him in. He's going to need a lot more seasoning than some of the guys that we have on the roster. Adding Zacchaeus in, adding DuVernay in. Hey, I don't know where the Tyler Scott hate is or love is at this point. I don't know where that meter is at, but it feels like he's losing his job with every mock draft that I see in the third round here. Do you think it would just be like, we're bringing you in as a future guy that can take over this job? Or do you think the Bears would try to have an expectation for him to play right away, start right away, and be that guy right away?
You know, I think the expectation is you're really fast and we want to add you to the receiver room because you're going to push everybody. And so I think when you identify a kind of a trump card trait where you're just like, I can just run past you at any time. Get that guy in the building and even use guys like DuVernay, who's been around the block. Use guys like Zacchaeus, who's played a lot of football, and use that to help develop him and help get the most out of him and get him up to speed. I don't think I would go into this saying, well, you know, if you're not the starting slot by, you know, week one, then we felt like we did not invest this pick properly. I'm more concerned with looking as you progress as a rookie and into year two and three, can we put you in a position where, A, you're effectively using that speed and you are taking the top off the defense, you are clearing things out in the intermediate areas, but, you know, between the coaching staff and your more experienced teammates, are we developing you into a more nuanced route runner, into a tougher guy after the catch, into, you know, a smarter receiver in how you set up your defenders and how you you run your choice routes and how you pick your spots? Are you developing that chemistry with Caleb Williams to where you're both on the same page and you're seeing the same things and reacting to coverages the same way? You know, all that stuff is to come. I feel like that's the job of everybody, not just Isaiah Bond or any receiver in his position. But when you have that one trait that you can hang your hat on in the meantime, I feel this way about quarterbacks who are like really great runners but need to develop accuracy, you know, and things like that. Is when you can survive on one thing long enough to get the rest of the picture put together, I think that can be a big thing. And I think, again, the speed is something you can build on. You just can't teach it. You get him in the room, whether he starts right away or whether he starts next year, the mission is more big plays, more overall speed to that room, make things easier on everybody else. And I think, again, if you're a guy like Tyler Scott, you've got to take that as fighting words. You've got to take that as an opportunity to elevate your game and come compete. You know, I mean, like we've said, they did such a great job of filling their biggest needs in free agency that you're going into this saying, hey, everybody's job is on the line here. You want to start for this team. You're going to have to bring your A game. It's not just I can go to Chicago and just show up and the depth chart is so bare that I'm going to get an opportunity. It's not like that anymore. They've filled out that roster quite well. And so if you're a guy like Tyler Scott, you're going to have to go fight for it, whether they take Isaiah Bond or not. And I think, honestly, that's a great position to be in as a team, where you've developed the health of your roster from top to bottom at certain positions where those roster spots aren't guaranteed.
Luke, are you saying it's going to be hard to make this team? Don't
we heard that last year.
We heard that last year.
That's a good point, right? Yeah.
One position that, like, so I think it's very clear, like, regardless of order right now, we all three think that the three most important positions, offensive tackle, so finding the left tackle of the future at some point, more pass rushers, running back. And you've kind of got the order flipped where it's running back, more pass rushers, offensive line. And of course, adding a receiver is important. We know with Jaquan Brisker's concussion history that there is still a question mark about his health, about the viability, the long-term thing. He's going to a new contract year. Where could they address finding a safety? They did it, you know, he was the last safety that they drafted that high in Ryan Poles' first year in the second round. Is there a sweet spot right now for where they could find maybe not somebody that's a polished product right now, but somebody that would be depth to work in? And if they do have issues with his health, that, you know, somebody that could play this year.
Yeah, I think honestly that 72 pick is really the spot for that. And again, if they don't go receiver, because it's not a massive immediate need, especially with the additions they made, kind of raise the floor of that room with Duvernay and Zacchaeus. Yeah. So it's not a great safety class. I don't love it top to bottom. I'm a big fan of the top two guys, Nicky Minwuri and Malachi Starks. I think there's a little bit of a gap between them and Xavier Watts from Notre Dame. And then I think there's another gap between them and the next tier. But the guy that really intrigues me that tends to be available in that range is Kevin Winston Jr. from Penn State, a guy who, if he doesn't get hurt last year, I feel like we're talking about him as an easy top 50 pick. And so he's the guy that I get really intrigued with, which, again, the other side of that coin is you're talking about needing insurance for a guy who's having trouble staying healthy, and then you're going to spend a pick on a guy who's coming off an injury. So I totally get that side of it. But not all injuries are created equal, first of all. Head injuries, there's a whole different concern with that in terms of longevity, in terms of just general well-being and health. And so, you know, if Winston is able to be the player he was before that injury at Penn State, which was a really, really, really good player, very well-rounded safety, range and coverage, can come down in the box and tackle. He's the kind of playmaker that if you get lucky and he's on the board because of that flaw, because of the concerns that he's not healthy enough, and you get, you know, a top 50 talent at full strength at 72 and you guard against that, if things don't go well with Brisker, I think that would be a perfect spot for him. Andrew Makuba from Texas, the Clemson transfer, I think is another guy that could make sense for them there. Again, it's not a super deep top to bottom safety class, but I think there will be guys at specific spots. Xavier Watts is a round two lock for me, the amount of times he took the ball away at Notre Dame. So maybe, you know, if they don't go running back, or they don't like the way that, you know, say the edge, the risk for the Bears in going running back early, like you guys mentioned earlier, is that you can't guarantee when that run on edge and D-line guys is going to start and then stop. Yeah. You don't know where that's going to fall off a cliff. And so if you're banking on being able to sit at 39 and 41 and being like, oh, you know, that's a deep class, they'll drop to us, there might be 8 or 10 of those guys that go in a 12, 15 pick range, and now you're left, you know, holding the bag. So I think if that happens and they lose out, they miss out on one of those picks, not being able to invest them in the defensive trenches. Maybe they like an edge guy there, but the D-line doesn't go, you know, the way they want it or the other way around. That range, Xavier Watts from Notre Dame is not a bad pick to me, just because, again, you guys that just have that knack for being able to take the ball away, they it's hard to find those guys, and I think he's absolutely a top 50 player in this draft. So that wouldn't put it past me if they don't like the way the board falls in the trenches there to go ahead and make that pick.
It'll be interesting to see how things go. The one thing that if I could swap anything on here is I would love to be able to address that linebacker position. Tremaine Edmonds just hasn't lived up to the contract to this point. Darius Alexander is, I think he's very versatile, but if I could swap out in that range for a linebacker, is there somebody in that top 50 that you think will be in that range that the Bears could go after? Because I think they are going to be eventually looking for, unless we have a massive bounce back season here, somebody to replace Tremaine Edmonds in the middle there.
The short answer is no. And it has a lot less to do with where they're picking that. I just don't love the linebacker class. I think it's bad. I think it's not very good. I think depending on whether you have Jalen Walker as a off ball linebacker or an edge guy, that, you know, is impacts it obviously. But assuming he's an edge, which for a lot of people I think he is, Jahad Campbell is the only first round linebacker in this draft. Even he's coming off shoulder surgery, wasn't able to work out at the pro day. He was in a sling, so you got question marks there. After that, there's this tier of like I like Carson Schlesinger from UCLA. I like Chris Paul Jr. from Ole Miss. I like Demetrius Knight from South Carolina. But he's going to be a 25-year-old rookie. You know, Barrett Carter from Clemson. All of these guys I've mentioned, I'm like, I'm cool with them at 72. I think 72 is a great spot to land really any of those guys. But if I've got to spend the top 40-ish, you know, pick on any of those linebackers not named Jahad Campbell, I'm just not thrilled about it. This it's easily the weakest position group in this entire draft, and I'd be really I wouldn't be thrilled about having to spend a top 40 pick in that class with Campbell obviously off the board. I just wouldn't be happy about it.
So I want to pivot to your draft as a like holistically what you've got in your first round, because the quarter I feel like we got clarity this week on the quarterbacks that Tennessee is going to stay at number one and draft a quarterback. I mean, it made sense all along, just knowing what Brian Callahan really feels about Will Levis, but like to reaffirm it with the private workout, sending everybody to his pro day. I mean, the Bears did the exact same thing with Caleb Williams last year when they were sitting there at number one. Obviously, now it looks like Cam Ward goes to Tennessee, and then you've got Shedeur Sanders going to Cleveland at number two. Then your next quarterback off the board is at 21, the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that absolutely needs a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Still waiting on Aaron Rodgers. Still have not heard if he's going to go there or not. But is there – what did you give any thought? Because I bring up New Orleans in this because I know you had them kind of circling back to the start of the show. You had them in the trade with the Las Vegas Raiders moving back to nine, and that's where New Orleans sits. Could Jackson Dart, who you've got going to Pittsburgh, could he actually – theoretically be a top 10 pick just because of a team that might have a quarterback need? Or do you think just based on value where he's at in his development right now that he would, you know, regardless of whether the Saints want to take a quarterback or not, would that be drafting him too high?
Yeah. So the couple things on that, I think my overarching, people would be like, oh, that's crazy. That'll never happen. Do you watch the draft? Like, I always tell every year, and whether it's the Bucks, who I grew up with, my team, that was who I rooted for growing up. Your team is always capable of doing something stupid. I promise. All 32 have done it before. They will do it again. It's just the way it works. So if you think that because something doesn't make sense, it's not going to happen, that's not the way the draft works. But specifically for the Saints, I look at a team who they have a lot of work to do on that roster as a whole. They've got salary cap hell to get out of. They've got a new coach coming in, new everything, right? They're going to rebuild that system. Now is not the time to spend the top 10 pick overdrafting the third best quarterback in a very weak quarterback class. That for them in particular, this is the time where you build the foundation of your franchise for the foreseeable future. And where is that done? It's done in the trenches on either side of the ball. I don't care which one. You rebuild the offensive line. You get impact players in the defensive front. That's how you build the foundation for a long-term project. If this is, you know, Joe Shane and Brian Daboll in New York, where if you don't fix it right now, you're getting fired at the end of the year. You're having a different conversation about the immediacy of needing to fill the quarterback need, which is why they signed Jameis Winston and Russell Wilson. But for the Saints in particular, I just think whether it's edge, interior, maybe even corner, because it's such a valuable position, there are other premium positions where they need to address first before they need to feel, you know, desperate to get, oh, we just got to have a quarterback in the building. Jackson Dart to me, I have a second round grade on him. That doesn't mean he's going in the second round because you can always just add a grade to the quarterbacks in terms of where they're actually going to come off the board because they're just so valuable. Putting him at Pittsburgh, I know is going to make a lot of Steelers fans scream, oh God, it's Kenny Pickett again. I promise you they're not the same prospect at all. I understand why you feel that way. But no, I think if you're asking me, would I be shocked if a team in the top 10 overdrafted a quarterback because they're desperate for one? Of course I won't be shocked because they do it all the time. They do that all the time. Kenny Pickett year, honestly, feels like the only year in the 25 years I've been doing this that the whole collective NFL decided to say, you know what? No, we're not doing this anymore. We're going to take Kenny Pickett at 20 and then nobody else till the third round. And honestly, they were right about pretty much all of those guys. But that was like the only time where most of the NFL is like, you know what, we're not going to overdraft these guys. So there's so many examples of it happening before. Could the Saints fall in love with Jackson Dart and do it again? Absolutely. Do I think it's the smartest thing to do? Absolutely not, especially in a class that's just not there from a quarterback standpoint. I'd much rather take a flyer on day two anytime on Jalen Milroe. I'd rather spend a fifth round pick on Kyle McCord or Will Howard or some, you know, the investment in the top 10 needs to be about the building blocks for a franchise where they are. And so that would surprise me. No, but if I was a Saints fan, I wouldn't be happy about it.
Do you feel like the league as a whole is kind of in one of the better quarterback situations that we've seen them in for a long time? I mean, when you start to look at the draft, the part for me where I was like, I want the Bears to trade back is normally quarterback is what gets you the trade back scenario. We need a quarterback. Mm-hmm. We're moving up to go get them. But you go Tennessee, Cleveland, Giants. They can have, you know, maybe the Giants not so much, but you have an opportunity to get a quarterback in that top three. Then you really don't see a team that's desperate, I would say, for quarterback till the New Orleans Saints. And then it feels like not again till the Pittsburgh Steelers. Is the NFL in this spot where kind of like everyone is getting not Pat Mahomes, but a quarterback that you can feel comfortable starting every Sunday in? I feel like I haven't seen this in a long time.
No, I think the way I would put it is there's so many teams that have a above average or better starter that if you don't even have that, you have no shot. Like that's why I think Cam Ward at one feels so sure now, and maybe even Shador at two feels to me. If I were the Browns, that's what I would do. Just because the Browns, especially, you had Joe Thomas for over a decade, you did nothing. You have had Myles Garrett for almost a decade, you have done nothing. Like unless you figure out the quarterback spot, you can have elite Hall of Fame players at very premium positions, left tackle, pass rusher, and you won't win anything because you don't even have an above average quarterback. And so, that being the case, you either have one or you don't. You can either compete or you can't. And so it's reflected in the amount of money that average to above average quarterbacks are being paid nowadays. And it's going to be evident in the fact that some people might have a late first round grade on Shador Sanders. He still should probably go number two overall because the position is just that important. It's why Jackson Dart has a second round grade, but he will probably go in the first round because even an above average quarterback is going to mean more to your success or failure than the best pass rusher or the best wide receiver or the best corner or the best left tackle. That's just the way the league works. So to your point, there's so many great quarterbacks that are popping up. And then such a significant, a strong tier of those, the Geno Smiths, the Baker Mayfields, yeah. Those guys that are Sam playing. Brody. Yeah. You know? And so if you don't even have that, you've just got no shot to compete. And it used to be, it's like so AFC heavy for the last few years. Now we're starting to see, you know, if this young group, you know, Jaden Daniels comes out of nowhere as a rookie, if Caleb Williams takes that next step, the NFC is going to start getting harder and harder. But if you don't even have a Jared Goff, if you don't have a Matthew Stafford, if you can't compete at that tier, you've just got no shot.
Yeah, no, 100%. Before we get you out of here, Luke, and appreciate you taking the time out of your day, I got to go with a sixth round draft pick question here because there's a young man. You like Omarion Hampton. I love what he does, but there is a conundrum in this draft. There is a 5'10", 270-pound human being named Willie Lampkin is just a people mover at every spot he's been at. And I need to know, can this young man in your mind play in the NFL at any position? Because I got to take a shot on him. Whenever I see Omarion Hampton break a big run, here's the guy that shouldn't be leading the way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If I have a late round pick and I can just burn it on anything, I'm burning it on Willie Lampkin all day long. Because here's the thing. Like, it's the opposite of the Will Campbell thing where it's just like, oh, he's got everything at left tackle, but his arms are like an inch too short. Willie Lampkin does not have short arms. He's a short dude, but he's got a wingspan. Like, so if you're talking about his ability to actually like do the things you need an offensive lineman to do and get out and reach, keep guys away from his pads and keep them from, you know, he can do all those things. And so it's impossible to watch Hampton film and not see that guy, you know, road grading everywhere. So no, I am a big fan of Willie Lampkin. He can absolutely play at the next level. If you can get that, you know, throw your size thresholds out the window when you get to the sixth and seventh round and take that guy, I don't think anybody, all 32 fan bases should be thrilled if they end up with Willie Lampkin on their team in about a month here.
I'm telling you, man, they had him listed 5'11", 290. I think he went to the combine and they measured him out 5'10", 270. I was like, what are you telling me? There's a human in the draft that's basically a linebacker.
Fullback. Put him at fullback and goal line. I don't care. Do something. Listen, I want him on my team.
We had the Duggar knot. I want to let Willie Lampkin on my team. I'm glad we're in agreement on that. Appreciate you coming on, Luke. Appreciate you taking the time out of your day. Let the people know where they can find you and what you got coming up next.
Absolutely. I'm on Twitter at Luke Easterling. Everything that I'm writing, you can find at athlonsports.com. Again, I have a brand new mock draft every Thursday morning. It's four rounds now. Sometimes I do trades, so it's a lot of fun. I like to go deeper with those than a lot of the places you might see. The Athlon Sports Draft Guide that comes out every year, the magazine that we put out. I don't know if you're like me. I still love having like a physical magazine to flip through every year. And so after growing up reading that magazine, it's one of my favorite things to be able to be a part of the awesome team that puts that together every year. So that's available wherever you get your magazines. We launched a new draft podcast last month called Best Podcast Available. It's the Athlon Sports NFL Draft Show. So that's out every Wednesday morning. I've had a bunch of your ESPN colleagues on there before. Booger McFarland's been on the show. Matt Miller's been on the show. So definitely subscribe and check that out. But yeah, come find me. Let's talk some football.
I love it. I love it. Make sure to tap in with Luke and stay tapped in here with us on the Chicago Bears podcast. For Courtney Cronin and Luke Easterling, it's your boy Pat the Designer back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down. One love. Peace.